What's going on, cliffhangers? We are back with another video. The Off the Cliff Show brought to you by 14th and Market Podcast Network. We have a special guest today. But before we get into that, I need everybody to hit that like button, hit that subscribe button. We are on the road to 500 subscribers before the end of December. So make sure you hit that like button, hit that subscribe button down below. Also hit the bell notification so you can be notified and you never miss a video. We do need to set a like goal on this video. The last video, y'all crushed. I think we got 40 likes. I asked for 30, so I appreciate y'all for that. So I'm going to let Devon, we need a like goal on the video today. What like goal are you thinking about?
You said 40 was the last one?
Yep.
We need 60 on this.
60? All right, Devon giving 60 likes. bet. Devon giving 60 likes, so make sure y'all hit that like button, hit that subscribe button. Also, now that y'all know he's here, host of the PHLY. Are y'all a podcast or a show? I meant to ask you that.
It's a podcast / show. Yeah. That's so, yeah, where today's world is, right?
Yeah, exactly. So big voice in the Sixers community, famous to us, my guy, friend of the show, host of the PHLY podcast, Mr. Devon Givens. You can introduce yourself, plug yourself. Hello, how you doing today?
Yeah, man, good to be with you on this new platform. So glad that you're doing this. Glad that you have this space to get your great basketball knowledge out there, share it with the people. So glad to be here. You want to, again, as Cliff said, from PHLY Sixers, the All City Network, the PHLY Sports that we are, not just Sixers, Eagles, Phillies, Flyers, Union, Penn State. We've got it all covered. So my teammates and Kyle Newbeck and Derek Bodner, we have a blast Monday through Friday talking some Sixers stuff. So I look forward to sitting here chatting with you and everybody else out there, man.
Appreciate that, man. I still got to get Kyle on the show. Every time I text Kyle, I just got to get in contact with Ty. I text Kyle today. I'm not hearing from Kyle until next week. So still got to get Kyle on here, man. But we can get directly into it, obviously. The news from yesterday, Joel and Paul George being out. Not really a surprise on Paul George's standpoint. Like, we all pretty much figure he'll be out for the season opener. I'm guessing he's probably going to play in Toronto. I believe that game is on Friday. He's probably going to play versus Toronto. But the big news is Joel being out. And I don't think the news, as you probably talked about it before, the news of him being out is so surprising. It's the plan that we have no idea what's going on. Like, and I said it in the offseason while he was not scrimmaging. I was like, this is pretty weird. Because, like, basic basketball, especially with them being a new team, like, just basic getting in basketball shape, like, you're going to have to scrimmage with a new team. You're going to have to build the chemistry. And you just have to ramp it back up with, like, full court movement and, like, passing and getting a chemistry within a rhythm with your team. And we all know that Joel is a rhythm basketball player. So I was like, all right, this is strange. And then when they said, like, he has not scrimmaged yet, and like the final, I think it was the final preseason game or something to that effect of last week, I was like, all right, he's absolutely not playing because you can't not scrimmage and then just throw him, a player like Joel, into a game and then expect for him to perform. So wanted to know your thoughts on that. I went off yesterday about that. It's just like, I think it's just like we have no idea what this plan is that they're trying to implement. And I think if they just communicated that with us, nobody would have cared that Joel was sat out today.
Yeah, so the first part of the plan was to make sure that we were aware that he was not going to play in a good amount of those back-to-backs, if at all. Okay, most people accepted that. Some didn't like it, but accepted it because it's probably to his best interest, the team's best interest, because the postseason is so important for him, for the team, his health overall, and maybe that's a way to go. As far as, let's take it back to the end of last season where they were eliminated by the New York Knicks, and he talked about publicly about wanting to have some chemistry, as you said, the camaraderie with his teammates, where it's not this change year after year after year after year with these players where you get used to who you're playing with. Fast forward to Paul George's injury in the preseason where he buckles his knee. And as he buckles his knee and hyperextends it, one of the things that he mentioned post-game in the locker room was the disappointing part of not being able to continue the work through the preseason to build up that chemistry, that camaraderie once again. That's the key word here because, as you said, there's so much change, not just with George, but basically with the entire roster and bringing these players in. So they were going to need that going into game number one against the Milwaukee Bucks, their first week of the regular season in general. And that is disappointing that they're unable to do that. Now, as far as the message goes to everything we just laid out, the back-to-backs, even at training camp while we were there and they were laying out kind of his workload in general, no practicing in general with the team, no full court participation, but drills, half court things. We saw it ourselves after practice was over, but the media was allowed in, some pick and pop work with the coaching staff, with the assistant coaches, with the player development guys. Maxi inserted himself because he's going to be the one working that pick and roll partnership with Joel Embiid, like we saw with James Harden, like we saw with Tyrese Maxey a season ago. That's the type of work that they were getting in. All of that was the ramp up period to gear up for a possible return for game one against the Milwaukee Bucks. So even going, as you mentioned, Kyle Newbeck, and we'll even throw Derek Bodner in there, my two partners on the PHLY Sixers show, they both had, after seeing practice on Monday, belief that he would be available and ready to go on Monday after him going through and be that 30 to 40 minute post-practice workout that the media was able to see some of it. So it was somewhat surprising that the news was dropped on Tuesday after the practice session that he had post-practice on Monday, and my teammates feeling, you know what? After everything, he looked pretty good. His body looks good. The weight looks good. The movement looked pretty good. Although he did not have a knee brace on, it did not mean he wasn't going to have it on for the game or even before they let them in to see practice on Monday and even Tuesday. So that's where the surprise came in, at least for us and for me, because of the belief after that workout on Monday that he would probably feel pretty good. Now, I'll say that he must have had some sort of setback at some point from Monday to Tuesday for them to rule him out right away. Some uncomfortableness somewhere in there with that knee where it played out the way that it did, Cliff.
Yeah, and it, like I said, it's just weird. Like, it's just communication. Like, we have no idea what's actually going on. What's the plan? What is he ramping up from? Of course, everybody's like, all right, well, that's what training camp and that's what preseason is supposed to be for. And we just have no idea what this ramp up process or this plan is. And I see a lot of people comparing it to the 2019 Kawhi Raptors. To me, it's a different situation because you're now low managing two stars, right? Joel Embiid and Paul George, as opposed to when they managed Kawhi, it was just Kawhi. Also, that Raptors team was pretty much already intact, except for adding Marc Gasol. And I believe it was the middle of that season. Yeah, in the middle of that season, but they were already intact. This is a brand new team that the Sixers have, and like you have to get that camaraderie, you have to get that consistency, that rhythm, that continuity to be able to go on and try to win a championship. So my belief, like I said, I believe like it's a different situation. Like I've seen a lot of people comparing it. Also, that's 2019. This is 2024. I don't like comparing things from like more than like three seasons ago because I think like it's different relevancy there. But what's your thoughts on that? And like it's the same coach that low managed Kawhi. Now he's going to low manage Joel, but like different situations. What's your thoughts on that?
And that was a big part of it, was the fact that Nick Nurse was the one who was there during the Kawhi Leonard situation in Toronto and having a firsthand experience of going through it with Leonard, and now the same thing here with Embiid, understanding how things, what things were then, how they worked, and what may work now, what may not work, because as you talked about, this is a totally different situation, especially when it comes to the personnel being so different for this team than it was with that Toronto Raptors squad. So you understand it just because, hey, if a star player, MVP candidate, can get through it, injury is different, but the situation is almost the same because you're trying to just map out everything and how you can have a game plan, how you can have this all situated for, this is how we're going to map things out, this is how we're going to go about it, we're going to no back-to-backs and this type of thing that we did with Kawhi, this may work with Joel, then I'm cool with that. I'm all right with that. But to your point, that now really goes into the other part of the Paul George part, which was you didn't expect an injury in the preseason from him that was going to cause him to miss the first few games to start off this campaign. So I agree with you, but in order to do it, you do have to have something to go off of. Even with Joel going back to the Tim Duncan part of it, where he said he wants to now start to implement a little bit more of the Tim Duncan regimen for this season of how he goes about his business the same way Tim Duncan did it. Now, it was years ago, but you like to hear it because you're talking about a Hall of Famer, a multi-time champion who was a selfless player and found a way to change his game on the fly and still be effective. And in order to do that, though, as you laid it out, you have to be able to be available and be on the floor to do so. It just cannot be practice time, because when the season starts, practice time really starts to diminish because you don't have enough time. There are too many games during the week, up to four games a week, where practice time just isn't available for you to get out there and get that. All of that stuff is going to come in an actual game because of the limited time that you have on the practice floor together.
Right. So speaking about that, speaking about not talking about, well, not playing the back-to-backs and not being able to have the like continuity and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you've seen the quotes from Kevin Garnett, Shaq, about not playing back-to-backs. And I'm pretty much on board with not playing the back-to-backs. Like I have not wanted Joel to play back-to-backs for about two seasons now, because I'm like, I don't understand how in 2024 we still even have back-to-backs in the NBA. But whatever. I am not a load managed guy. Like, I don't like load managing. I think that my stance is, like, people pay a lot of money to pay to go see the star players. They don't pay this money to go see the role players. Like, and like, I do agree with KG to the point where it's like the job calls for 82 games, right? Like, it's been that way forever. Like, it's an 82 game season. If you get injured, sure, you don't play. As far as load managing goes, like, I don't like that guys can just sit out because they're like, all right, I just want to rest. But like, I understand it from Joel's standpoint. So where are you with load managing? And this is not just like a Joel thing. This is just me, how I feel about just load managing in general. So how do you feel about that? Like, I understand only the playoffs matter, but the regular season matters too, because you don't want to get like a lower seed and then have to face a Boston in the first round and New York in the first round. Like, you don't want that to be the situation. So where are you as far as load managing in general, and also when it comes to Joel?
The overall load management piece, I'm not the biggest fan of, because as you say, you grow up watching the game, you want to see everybody. You want to see the best players in particular. That's why you tune in, to see those best players, see what their team can do against the other best players out there on the floor in any given night. So I'm not the biggest fan of it, but I do understand it a little bit more as we've seen it for so many years. When it comes to Joel Embiid, he is a different case. Mm-hmm. I don't love it, but it's probably how you have to manage him in the rest of his career. That's just a fact. Now, unless you're going to trade him and have some other team and organization deal with this situation, then this is what we have to deal with in Philadelphia when it comes to Joel Embiid. So as far as Garnett and even Shaq comes in, I heard the Garnett one, did not hear Shaq, but I've got this sense of Shaq because he's been saying it for years on TNT when it comes to Joel. The Kevin Garnett piece, I was talking to Anthony Gargano on the show this morning about this, actually, because I'll put my dislike of Kevin Garnett aside. Hall of Famer he is, great player, all of that stuff. Unless he understands the entire situation, I don't think his opinion is one that is, it's not that it doesn't matter, is that do you know the entire deal about mm-hmm. Joel Embiid to make that assessment? Yes, it calls for 82 games. Of course it does. We get it. It calls for 82 games. I would like to see him play 82 games too. He can't. So for right now, I'm leaning on Tyrese Maxey to play his 78 games, maybe even 82. I'm looking for Paul George to play his hopefully 65 to 68 games, because he's also going to miss some time as well. But when it comes to Joel Embiid, you do have to handle him a little bit differently because of his knees. It's not just a postseason thing. This is a career thing when it comes to Joel Embiid. So for Kevin Garnett to say that, maybe I'm being a little disrespectful and saying that he does not have all the information, but I wonder, for him to say that, does he have all the information in understanding Joel Embiid's history? We've seen it. We've lived through it. Garnett focuses on the entire NBA. and probably the Boston Celtics and the Minnesota Timberwolves more so than anything, because those were his two franchises, and not what's going on with Joel Embiid and his injury history, to understand that it's probably unlikely that he is going to be able to play an 82-game season for the rest of his career.
Yeah, the same thing with KG. I took it as him speaking. It was just like Joel was just the topic.
Kevin Garnett has missed his fair amount of games when he got later in his career too.
Right.
When he got there, yeah.
Right. I took it as him speaking on the whole NBA, honestly. And it was like Joel was just the topic. It's just like how aggressive players get when Joel's name is brought up is so insane. Like they just had the perfect careers is ridiculous to me. But I did take it as him speaking of the whole NBA. And you brought up Tyrese Maxey and like the amount of games that he might be able to play. And I don't want to be all doom and gloom, so we're going to get to some positivity finally on here. And I also want to bring up, people on Twitter were saying, like, I didn't know people cared this much about the NBA season opener. Well, yes, I like to watch my team play good basketball, and I like to watch other basketball games with their best player. Like, if it was Austin Reeves versus Peyton Pritchard last night, I would have been upset. I would have been upset that I had to watch that. But moving back on to Tyrese Maxey, we know the Raptors went 17-5 without Kawhi that year in 2019. So I'm going to ask you, who is your X factor on the Sixers that is going to be able to keep their head above water when Joel and Paul George are out and you're going to have to play with Tyrese Maxey, Andre Drummond, Caleb Martin, those guys, but you're going to have a respectable record in order to stay in top four seed contention. The only caveat is you can't pick Tyrese Maxey. So who is going to be his running mate to where you can look at that guy and depend on him most nights out of more nights than not to be able to keep the Sixers competitive with Joel and Paul George out, most likely on the back-to-back nights?
You did not mention him when you ran through just a few of those names that you just ran off, and that is Kelly Oubre. He is the one that out of everyone, and people are probably, oh, man, you know, throw your arms up and Kelly Oubre, don't do that. But he is the only one that we know has been a 20-point-per-game scorer in the NBA because of his skill set offensively. Now, the other part that he did show us a season ago was his two-way ability as a defensive player. So when we've really got excited about the idea of them having the three wings in the starting unit, was that you had George with Martin and Kelly Oubre, and the ability to switch and defend and be athletic and get out in the open floor and transition and after having a really good defensive stop and creating an offensive opportunity for your offense. That's still going to be there when they're all available. But when they're not, and to your question of who's going to have to step up, I think it's going to have to be him. Can he do it? That's the question. Can he do it consistently in those non-Embiid George games to team up with Maxey to give you somewhere from 15 to 18 or maybe even 18 to 20 efficiently while still doing a good job on the defensive end as well? It's going to have to be a collective effort defensively anyway, but Maxey's going to get double teamed. So now who's going to be the one that can put the ball on the floor in a one-on-one opportunity? Who's going to be the one that can knock down the shot when the ball swings to him? Or even when the ball does swing, they close out hard and you put the ball on the floor again, get to the rim and finish, or get to the rim and create for others, maybe even someone like Andre Drummond or Caleb Martin to get a better look at a shot, because of the attention that you just drew. So I know it's asking a lot of Kelly Oubre, and Kelly Oubre has a very good idea of how good he is as a player in the NBA. So you may not want it, but this is probably what you're going to have to live with for right now and seeing what it looks like. And I think Kelly Oubre has to be that X factor, not only offensively, but defensively be that two-way player. Because when George is out, it's up to Caleb Martin and Kelly Oubre again to be the ones to slow down things on the perimeter with those offensive-minded wing players, guard players that are opposite them to slow down, so that's not Tyrese Maxey's responsibility.
Yeah, I think I agree with you as far as the Kelly Oubre piece, like him being the X factor. And he played pretty well in the non-Joel games last year when it was just him and Tyrese. I think he got into like a little bit of a rhythm. And what really surprised me and shocked me and had gave me hope is that series versus the Knicks where he was guarding Jalen Brunson and he did a pretty good job through those first 2 to 3 games where I was like, okay, Kelly has shown he can be like, it can be bigger than himself. Like he took on the defensive role and he just, his offense was shot that series, but it was because he took on a bigger defensive role versus Jalen Brunson and he played pretty well. Like he used his length. He was able to disrupt Brunson a lot. And I think, like, if Kelly accepts that and he can bring the offense along with him as well throughout the season in the non-Joel and Paul George games, I think that he can be a really good running mate next to Tyrese Maxey. And then, like, carry along some wins here and there just so you can the Sixers can stay above water. So I do agree with you there. So with that being said, where do you think the Sixers finish in the East this season? Because we all know that they are a top three team in the East if they are fully healthy. But the regular season matters. We don't know how many games Joel and Paul George are going to play. So where do you think they finish?
Yeah, so the over-under right now in Las Vegas is 51.5. And I did go over. That could just simply be 52 with their games. So if I'm going to stick to that with what I said on Monday during our season preview, on the show, I will say that they are still a top three seed in the Eastern Conference and get over that 51.5 win total. The question, of course, is how much do I knock that down simply because of the fact that these guys may miss an extended period of time. Now, this is just week one. So right now, I'll stick to that. But if we get past this week one, three games in total, and we see that they're going into week number two, and they're starting to miss more games next week, then we might have to knock that number down. But I'm not going to change it. I'll stand on it. I said it's top three seed. I'll keep them in the top three as of right now. If I have to adjust in the moment, which we are allowed to do because things happen over the course of an 82-game
season. Twitter won't allow that.
They're going to have to. They're going to have to. Then I'll adjust. I'll readjust.
Nah, I think they're going to be they'll be fine. I'm not really worried about a lot. If they have this plan and they're strictly sticking to this plan, I think that they're pretty confident in the amount of games Joel and Paul George are going to be able to play without any, like, God forbid, any like freak accidents or anything happening. Mm-hmm. So I do think they will still be top three team in the East. And I'm still saying I'm not a championship this year or bust player. I just need them to make it to the conference finals. Show me some type of progression to where I'm saying, okay, they are. Oh, you're not. No, they have.
No, I want to see the progression. But it's when you do everything that you did here in the offseason and bringing these guys back in, bringing Embiid and Tyrese Maxey back on their extensions, or just adding to their extension, and you go and make a splash the way that you did with Paul George, and then bringing back Oubre, Kyle Lowry, and Ricky Council, having him on a deal, but KJ Martin as well. But then the other splashes that came behind Paul George, yes, it is about improving and being better than you were a year ago, getting to the Eastern Conference Finals. We always talk about that. But the one thing I know that the team itself says is winning a championship. So if you're going to hold yourself to that standard, so am I. Because of everything else that has happened in years past, these second round exits, these knocked out in the first round, this has been a buildup. So while this is a 2-3 year window with Paul George and Joel Embiid, I need you to get there now. I do. I understand how good the rest of the Eastern Conference is. I'm not ignoring Orlando and Cleveland. Indiana had the Sixers number a year ago. I'm not ignoring any of those teams. And, of course, I didn't mention New York and Boston for a reason because we know they're right there with them. I'm not ignoring any of that. I'm looking at them because over these years, Cliff, while the opponents have been good, it's the playoffs. These things happen. You shouldn't have lost to Atlanta. You should have beaten Boston when you had a 3-2 series lead and you had them right where you wanted them on your home floor, up by 2 points in the final 5 minutes, and you let Jason Tatum get into a rhythm and you lose that series, they blow you out in game seven. You give credit where credit is due with the opposition. But every time we talk about them losing in the postseason, it's because of them. That's why I say, if they are that good, if they eventually build up that continuity on the floor, they remain in that top four, top three, and they get to the postseason, there's no reason why I should not believe, if I see something from them, that they should, especially if they do another deal at the trade deadline, that they should not be in the NBA Finals. Now, we'll talk about what happens when you get there, because there are a variety of different ways that you look at it because of their opponent, how hot you are, some things that are working, and maybe there's a season series against this Western Conference team where they swept you or you swept them. There are a lot of variables and factors that go into it. It's always them. You give credit where credit is due, that Boston is better. They have their number. But it's you too. You shouldn't have lost that game six on your home floor. You shouldn't have had a game seven with the Atlanta Hawks losing 3 or 4 as a number one seed on your home floor. So self-inflicted wounds have been there for them to lose the way that they have. And that's why I say no. It's not just about getting to the Eastern Conference Final. Now look, if they lose in a game seven against Boston and Jaylen Brown hits a three-pointer to put their foot on, you know, and just and end their season, there's nothing I can really say about that except for analyzing the game, going back to some things where they missed an opportunity. That's just us analyzing as a fan and watching the game. But if that doesn't happen, they should get to the NBA Finals and we'll reassess once they get there. So that's it for me, man. I mean, you've lost these series because the other team is good, but also you had a chance to win those series because you were just as good, and you did not. And I put that on them more so than I do against the opponent doing what they did. And that's not to disrespect the opponents. That's just saying that I thought the Sixers were that good at those times where they should have advanced to the Eastern Conference Finals, and that natural progression. NBA Finals for me, you have to get there. I didn't say win the championship. I said get to the finals, and we'll all talk in June of what they should do once we get there.
You got me feeling like I'm too soft on them now. I feel like I
and you know I'm one that's really I'm
positive
cool.
And like
I try to look at things realistically and logically and not put so much. But it's not about you being soft or anything. It's just this is how I view it. That they should have been to the Eastern Conference Finals twice already. And if it wasn't Boston, maybe it should have been Toronto. Maybe somewhere along the lines, they should have been there one or two times in the Eastern Conference Finals. Where, why are we just pushing it to the Eastern Conference Finals and not the NBA Finals if we're to believe that they're that good? Maybe you don't believe that they're that good and they do get to the Eastern Conference Finals only because Boston is such a juggernaut, or New York has their number, or some surprise team comes out of nowhere and it's just their year and not the Sixers' year. But then all that's going to do is lead you to believe, see, why didn't the Sixers do the same thing when it was their time, when it was their opportunity? And what else can the Sixers possibly do right now outside of a trade deadline splash or maybe something in the offseason to make you think that they should get to the finals that they didn't do this past offseason where we're talking about the finals right now?
Yep. See, now Paul George blinded me. It was Paul George and Kate. They blinded me from it's I need to go back to who I was. Yep. I need to go back to. So I might change my decision. It might be NBA Finals or bust.
It's cool. Eastern Conference Finals. And again, when you get to the Eastern Conference Finals, this would be their first time there, but you're going to look at it and you're going to say, I have to make a prediction, and you're going to give a sound, well-thought-out prediction of your analyzing how they got there and why you think they should or should not advance to the NBA Finals. Right now, that's fine. Eastern Conference Finals is fine for you. It's fine for many people. Me personally, this is just my thought. This is how I'm starting the season off.
All right. Well, y'all heard it there. NBA Finals or bust for you.
For me. And I didn't say win yet. Now, when you get there, you might as well win it. You got there. You might as well Right. Yeah. But we don't know who the opponent is. We don't know what it's going to look like. So I think it's fair for everybody to leave it open if you decide to choose that they are going to get to the finals to then look at. Now, we made our prediction, and I thought Boston was going to win the NBA. I thought they were losing the Eastern Conference Finals. But, again, my thought is they should get to the NBA Finals.
All right, well, I heard it there from Devon. Really appreciate you having you on, bro. I appreciate you for even reach back out to me. Sometimes I don't know who's going to respond or not. I don't know if people forgot about me.
I never not respond. I always respond.
I appreciate you for coming on, man. Also, is there anything you want to plug, PHLY, anything?
Yeah, just, again, Monday through Friday. We will have a day off during the week if they have a weekend game, so we can give you our pre- and post-game coverage during the games. So Monday through Friday, PHLY Sixers. Go ahead and find us, like, subscribe, check us out. Have some fun. You can always chat in the comments during the show. We read our comments during the show. We try to interact and make sure that people feel involved in the show, because that's what it's all about. We can't do it without everybody. So Monday through Friday, PHLY Sixers. Find us on YouTube. If you don't catch us on YouTube, you can catch us wherever you do find your podcast. Check us out there, and should be a fun time. Myself, Kyle Newbeck, Derek Bodner, Rich Hoffman, and that's where we'll start tonight, Rich Hoffman and I, for the pregame and postgame for Sixers Bucks tonight. So we hope that everybody checks in with us.
And you guys do so say if the Sixers have a game, y'all do, you do your postgame. Say the Sixers don't have a back-to-back, do you guys do the day coverage as well, like just a show that next day, just, you guys as well?
Okay. On game days, it's just the pre- and postgame. Non-game days, it's our 3 p.m. show.
Got it. Okay. All right. Y'all go tap into Devon, Kyle, Derek. You said Rich Hoffman as well.
Rich Hoffman, there. Roy Burton is going to be in the mix. So, yeah, we got everybody covered. So hopefully we're talking all the way through June with some meaningful basketball.
Hopefully. And I just got to pray for health, man. That's all you got to pray for. It should be a very exciting season. I can't wait for it to start tonight. But like I said, Devon, I appreciate you for coming on. It was great, man. And make sure y'all go hit that like and subscribe button on here and PHLY.